Sonny, aren't you worried that maybe the Biden White House will try to censor this conversation?
I wouldn't be surprised if they do try to do that, Tim.
Yeah, I know. That's one of the things they like to do. It's
censor.
they say that they're, you know, they're just looking out for us. They're trying to protect us because they know what's best.
They're from the government and they're here to help, right?
Right. The scare. I think it was Ronald Reagan said the scariest words ever said in the English language.
Yes.
That's true. And so I wish we knew someone who worked both in campaign life and also previously worked at the White House. Do you know anybody?
I think we could probably get someone.
We probably could. As a matter of fact, in a second, we will probably talk to someone just like that because this is the Line Drive podcast. And as we were just discussing, here he is, ladies and gentlemen, the great, the one and only Jay Hogan Gidley. Hogan, good to see you as always. Thanks for being with us.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me, Tim, Sonny. Great to see y'all.
What first tell us what you've been up to, Hogan.
I am still at the America First Policy Institute, and everyone knows, if you know anything about me, you know I'm very steeped in policy. I'm very good at the minutia and details of complex, intricate policy at the federal and state level. That's why it's a perfect fit for me. In actuality, I do a lot of comms over there at America First Policy Institute, and I work at the Center for Election Integrity, focused on kind of cleaning up some of the election problems we've had in the last 25 years in this country that people on the right and the left have been complaining about. So it's been a good time, and just trying to get out there and bring everybody back focused on those policies that really 80% of Americans support, regardless of race, religion, color, creed, or gender, or whatever. So, you know, that's kind of what I've been doing.
I was going to give you credit for being a policy wonk there.
Me too.
Yes. You know.
You didn't have to tell on yourself.
Can I ask you a question? Are they, what you were just talking about, like 80% of people agreeing on things, is one of those things voter ID?
82% of people, well, no, and I'm going to correct you. It's not voter ID. 85% of the people in this country want photo ID. They think you should actually prove you are who you say you are with photo identification before casting a ballot. So it is wildly popular in this country.
So voter ID is not specific enough of a term?
Photo identification is what we pulled, and it was 85%.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But remember, a lot of people think that's racist because you can't go to the DMV. Right. As Kim Blackwell says, the African-American gentleman I work with, who used to be the Secretary of State of Ohio, you can't get onto a plane with an electric bill.
Yeah, right. That's true. But, you know, I've seen lots and lots of polling that shows that a large majority, almost a supermajority, I think, you know, in the high 60s, I think, of Black people support voter ID also.
They do.
And so it's actually the white liberals who say that it's racist. Which shocking. Is pretty amazing. Yeah, it's shocking.
As usual, the white liberals know what's best for everybody.
I bet they're mostly women, too.
Yeah, you know, that's what drives me crazy.
As the woman, I can say that.
On Twitter, it's always the white female liberals who can spot the racists. They're racist. Yep. Their racism detectors are so finely tuned. They know where all the racists are. And, you know, it's never them, of course.
Yeah. Why does this only apply to voting? Like, why is this not? Like, where's the outrage for going to the ABC store to buy alcohol or to buy cigarettes or even medicine, like cough medicine? You got to be 18 and show an ID for, you know?
Well, it's become religion. I mean, to ask yourself, do you really need to know an answer to that? Ask yourself why would you oppose tightening restrictions, tightening safety on anything? Restricting access to people who don't deserve to have access to it, as in people voting under the wrong name, for example. Why would you oppose that? What possible reason could you have?
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know. Who knows?
I mean, there are several answers to that, but yeah. Sure.
Right. I mean, it was mostly rhetorical.
Let's keep it rhetorical for this.
Yeah. So let me ask this. Speaking of white liberals who think that they know better than anybody else does, did you guys see the news here about this injunction granted by a federal judge against the Biden administration, and a whole bunch. If you looked at the actual order, it's a whole bunch of people who were actually named in the injunction. And the order says that the Biden administration and all these specifically named officials will no longer communicate with social media platforms for the purpose of censoring content on those platforms. And have you followed any of this stuff?
Yeah, I absolutely have. In fact, when the ruling came down, it was one of those deals where I just had to take a look and read it. I'm trying to pull up something I noticed in that ruling now. It listed like a litany of things that you couldn't collude about, which tells me they were colluding about. It was everything from suppressing the Hunter Biden laptop, which you and I, Tim, are so angry about.
Still to this day. I don't know.
The lab leak theory, a speech about the efficacy of masks and COVID-19 lockdowns, speech about the vaccines, speech about election integrity in 2020, about securing voting by mail, suppressing parody content by the defendant, negative posts about the economy, negative posts about Joe Biden. That's a pretty wide range of issues, which were basically central to any presidential campaign. The left colluded, the government colluded with big tech to say can't talk about it.
Yeah.
That's insane.
It is insane. Sonny, what was you're sitting there with your mouth open. What was your reaction to this whole thing?
Did you say that said can't say anything negative about the economy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Said negative things about negative posts, suppressing negative posts about the economy.
I'm sorry. Is this North Korea? Like, well, they don't even have access, I guess, to social media. What do we compare it to? China? Like, what?
Yeah. Here's the thing. They for years, you know, conservatives have been complaining about what social media giants have been doing, saying, oh, they're suppressing conservative voices. They're censoring us. And the left always said, you know, they said two things. One, you know, build your own platform then. Right. So Elon Musk buys Twitter. Well, that, of course, they don't like that either. So the other thing that they said was they're private companies. They can do what they want. That the First Amendment doesn't apply because it's not the government doing it. Well, now it is. Yeah. So what's their excuse now? When it's the government ordering the social media companies to do it, it is, in fact, a violation of the First Amendment.
But you know what they also said before we even got to that point was it's just a glitch. It's just the algorithm.
It was right,
the algorithm.
Yeah.
But the glitch in the algorithm never benefited the right. Have you noticed that? Never benefited conservatives. And in that ruling, the judge even said all of these things were anti-conservative. They were never any in the opposite direction. Never suppression in the opposite direction. And remember, Tim, I think we all kind of faced some of the Twitter wrath. But I got kicked off, remember, because I received a ballot in the mass mail-in campaign from the left from somebody I didn't recognize. The name came to my apartment. So I called my landlord and I said, hey, do you know who this person is? They said, yeah, he lived there 8.5 years ago.
Right.
So I posted ballot.
And he's getting
and
a
I'm
ballot.
Like, hey, yeah, this mass mail-in thing is going to go real well. Guy said he hadn't, you know, I talked to my landlord 8 years, that guy lived here, roll the eye emoji, right? An eye roll emoji. And they kicked me off for it. Like it was misinformation. I'm like, here's
what
the
rule?
Maybe
I was going to say, what rule did you break there?
Oh, it's, you know, casting doubt on the validity of the election, right?
Obviously. That's literally just like factual.
Ballots.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
mail-in ballots on the thing. It was literally called out directly in here.
So, yeah. Oh, some of these things, man.
Suppressing speech about the security of voting by mail. That
there
was
you
me.
Go. That was you. You're a bad, bad man.
Just me.
Bad man.
Nobody else.
Some of the stuff, like you were saying, the list of things that that they're not supposed to do, which we can now safely assume that they were, in fact, doing because they've been told not to do it. But it's, you know, it goes beyond collusion. This is the White House acting as master over the social media servants, really. Mm-hmm. It was very, very clear. This was not collusion as much as it was coercion. And that the White House was strong arming these things. Some of the quotes from this 155 page opinion that accompanied the injunction are just amazing. Here, the digital director, Biden's digital director, a guy named Rob Flaherty, he wrote this to Facebook. This is an email from the White House, the digital director at the White House to Facebook. Quote, "We are gravely concerned that your service is one of the top drivers of vaccine hesitancy, period. We want to know that you're trying. We want to know how we can help. And we want to know that you're not playing a shell game with us when we ask you what's going on." Other things that the White House said to these social media companies in emails. Here's a quote. You are hiding the ball. Here's another quote. Cannot stress the degree to which this needs to be resolved immediately. Please remove this account immediately. And here's another one. I want an answer on what happened here, and I want it today. Now, what kind of a relationship does that sound like? The people,
yeah,
honest to God. And then when the social media platforms do this and respond, yes, sir, going to get right on that, sir. And then they mm-hmm. take down the tweets, they take down the Facebook posts, they suspend the accounts. That is absolutely government censorship, and it's unconstitutional as hell. It just is.
I'm telling you, like, I'm sorry. I'm just like, really, I did not know about that economy piece. And I'm like super shocked by that, because it's one thing, you know, if it's not one thing, but I can see how they would be like, oh, well, COVID is science, vaccine, safety, whatever. But this is solely to benefit one political party, and it's the one that's in power right now.
Yeah. I mean, how is it different if you're talking about preventing people from talking about the bad economy? Mm-hmm. And the White House is saying, you're not allowed to do that. Don't take down these posts that disparage the economy. Is it any different from what, say, the DNC would do if they had access to the controls at Twitter? Right?
Yeah, sure. They'd say,
it's exactly the same.
Well, apparently it seems as though they do have the controls.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
At new social media platforms.
That's true.
You know? But do you think, Hogan, do you think, I mean, how do we get past this? I mean, just because the White House is going to stop being involved doesn't mean that the companies are going to stop self-censoring.
That's a great point. I do think the watchdogs are more aware now. I do think exposing, you know, what we thought as being truthful and reality is important too, because now the Americans see behind the curtain. Look, there's one thing the left hates is transparency, whether you're talking about teaching CRT to your kids behind your back, whether they're trying to trans your kids at school without the parents knowing, whether it's election mm-hmm. integrity, whether it's about big tech censorship, Hunter Biden laptop. They don't want you to see anything behind the curtain, because see, then you may be informed. Then you may catch on to what they're doing, and hey, you may not like it. They want you to sit down, shut up, take it, like it, whatever they do, whatever they give you, whatever they push on you. And so I think exposing it is a big part of it. Now, far and wide, I was doing a show on a network that was not Newsmax and was not Fox earlier tonight. Mm. I was watching their lineup. The first 30 minutes of the show on one of the, several shows in this one network. And I was watching one of the screens. It was J6 and impeachment
tonight
and indictments. What? That was what it was. Yes.
They're still talking. What about January 6th?
I didn't watch it. It was on mute. I was watching the show I was going to be on.
Has there been some new development?
No, but I was just thinking to myself, are you serious? Like, this is, they're not talking about cocaine in the White House. They're not talking about this censorship and the free speech issues. And by the way, when did the left become like the protectors of three-letter agencies and big pharma?
No kidding.
And when did they reject free speech all of a sudden? Like, do you see how weird this all is?
Yeah.
How this has gotten?
How about when did the media side with the censors against free
yes.
speech? You hear
yes.
the Washington Post lamented that this ruling against the White House would, quote, sideline federal government officials who had become key contributors in their efforts to keep, social media platforms safe. The White House is saying, oh, no, this will really harm the federal
really
government's
hard.
Efforts to shut up Americans, oh my gosh. And the New York Times tweeted that this could curtail efforts to fight disinformation. You guys, the First Amendment, you would think that the news media would come to the defense of the First Amendment, which of course is the very thing that protects them from government interference. Just like this. You'd think, but you'd be wrong. If you thought that the media would defend the First Amendment, then you would be wrong, because they're siding with the left. Because you know why? They don't like the people who are being censored. And so therefore it's okay.
Yeah.
That's all it is. That's the bottom line. These people have no integrity. They have no consistent ideals. They are ideologues. They are ideologues. And so long as the people who are getting punished are people who are their political adversaries, they're okay with it. But the first time a leftist gets shut down, boy, man, oh man, it's a threat to the very fabric of this this country.
My thought
it makes me so mad.
Nothing's better than a hyped up Tim Murtaugh, all right?
I know, my favorite thing. But I was just going to say, my thought is, you know, during COVID, the left and the people in charge really got a taste of control because people were so willing to bow down and listen, you know, do whatever it takes, stop the spread, 2 weeks, whatever. They got a little taste of how easy it is to manipulate people and to get them to bend to their will. And once that happened, then social media platforms started jumping on it. I mean, Instagram, as I'm sure y'all can remember, with the stories, with the vaccine, they put that vaccine sticker on everything and it would like cover up your stories. And once you get that ball rolling, I mean, how do you stop it?
Right. Go ahead, Hogan.
No, you're making a good point, Sonny, because look, not only was it easy for them to kind of have that power and they realized, oh my gosh, look at what I can do with it. Watch me wield it. Think about how easy it was for our experts, our believers in science, to lie to us with no evidence, no data. And the American people are like, oh yes, Dr. Fauci. Oh yes, Dr. Birx, you guys, NIH, I get it. CDC, I get it. World Health Organization, yes. You're always looking out for our well-being. Thank you very much. And then within, you know, 3 months, definitely six, you're like, wait a minute. What are you telling us to do? And why are you telling us to do it? The data doesn't come back and support any of these things. And then, of course, once you had that second variant of COVID, all of that was out the window because the lie that you wouldn't catch the vaccine, the lie you wouldn't spread the vaccine was now proven and it was wide open. And what's even more frustrating than that is despite the fact that Fauci and everybody else in the establishment lied about masks, they lied about the shot, they lied about the efficacy of the vaccine, all of the things they lied about, they lied right to the president because I sat right beside him and watched them lie. Even after all that, Joe Biden still used him and still followed him, even though all of the data didn't prove a thing that they were trying to tell us. And that's the point. The media pushed it. Big tech pushed it because they wanted to keep the thumb on everybody and prevent them from fighting back, prevent them from knowing the truth.
Yep. And it is because, like Sonny alluded to this earlier, it's because they are substituting their own judgment for the Constitution. In this case, where we're talking about censorship and the White House ordering social media platforms to censor speech that they don't like, they're substituting their own judgment for the United States Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the First Amendment that's contained in there. And think about the really scary part is they're doing it because they think they know what's best for us, substituting that judgment. They think they know what's best for the rest of us, the little people, right? These pinheads in the White House making decisions for all of us and deciding that they know better than we do. The scary part is that it's really easy to take that justification that we know better than you do and expand it and apply it to damn near anything that the government can get its hands on. Oh, we know better than they do, so we'll just do this. And they just disregard the Constitution. And the proof that they don't care about the Constitution is the fact that the Biden administration, through DOJ, has appealed this injunction. So they want to keep doing it. They didn't say, oh, we're not doing these things. We weren't ordering them. They're appealing the injunction, which means they want the ability to continue to do
it. Talk to them. Sure. Right.
So they admit that they're doing it. Therefore, they don't see anything wrong with it. It is flagrantly unconstitutional. I think this is impeachable. I honestly do. It is a violation of Joe Biden's oath of office to authorize activity that is a flagrant and on its face, a violation of the First Amendment on its face.
19 minutes in, it took you to use the I word.
It's true. It's true. This is a serious thing. And where does it, I'd like to know. I would love to know what the discussions with Joe Biden were about this. Hey, we're going to tell the people of the social media companies that they're going to target these specific accounts to take down these tweets, to suspend these accounts. That's actions against American citizens. They don't have the authority to do that.
Like Jerry Nadler, like 2 weeks ago, said something like, hey, if you weren't putting masks on your kids when they were 2 years old, then you were really, you're a child abuser.
Yeah.
He was saying that 2 weeks ago. That's not 2 years ago, 2 weeks ago.
Right. But like, that's not misinformation.
You would say, hey, now that we know what we know, we should have masked up the kids. Instead of saying that, it's like, no, you should have done it. And if you didn't, that was child abuse. And that's the extra step that liberals always go to. Now, all of a sudden, if it's child abuse, see, they get to come in and try and take your kids even more. They get to kind of grab a hold of that parental rights that you're supposed to have. The government has it better. And Sonny, you're about to face this hardcore.
Yes, exactly. Have you seen, I think it was Washington State that has a bill proposed that if you don't give your children gender-affirming care, if they're trying to transition, then the state can take your kids away.
Yep, that's what I'm saying. I know,
like, Canada already does that. And this is another example of, take our leaders out of this. What it's going to take is us normal everyday people standing up against it. Something that did not happen during COVID. There were so few people that stood up against it and said, you know what? This is like too far. It took too long, in my opinion, for people to stand up against it. And it's just going to keep happening until we stand up and say no and like vote them out or, you know, whatever it takes. It's just, it's crazy the direction our country is heading right now. And I don't like it because, like you said, I'm about to have a baby. And if that starts happening to my kid, Lord help me.
Lord help us all.
Lord help us all.
Maybe we should stop talking about that. It gets me too upset. But the thing is, I'm not confident that stuff like this will get fixed because you can't vote out the people who run the biggest media operations in the whole country.
You can't vote out
the bureaucracy that's ingrained in the U.S. federal government. It's like 1 million federal employees or something like that. And that may be 6 or 7 million actually federal employees. And that's the deep state that everybody talks about. And it's this kind of mentality that is ingrained in that. And I just don't know how you get it out. I mean, President Trump found out how hard it is to fight the deep state.
Well, and you saw, like, go back and look at Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. It's like one person from a terminal emailing, hey, don't worry. We got an insurance policy. Don't worry.
Yeah, right. Like,
How do you find out about these people? So deep.
And you don't find out about it until months or years after the fact. But it's not like this is a preventable.
And it's done. The damage is done.
Yeah.
The damage is done then.
So this is what I rack my brain about, though, with the social media problem is how you fix it. Because I don't think there is any fixing it. So do you just get off Twitter? Do you get off Facebook?
Look, the First Amendment is something that, you know, it not only does it permit disagreement, it invites disagreement. Like, you know, there's no mute button if you're walking down the street, like in a literal town square setting where people can express their opinion. There's no mute button. You can't really censor people if they're out there actually expressing out loud by voice. Their opinion. I mean, people, I don't even see any difference really in the way that my Twitter experience is the way it is now versus before Elon Musk took over. I honestly don't. My engagement is not any higher. I don't think my feed is any different, but I see liberals on there complaining like it's some kind of hellscape. And I'm thinking, what in the world are you seeing? This it's a social media platform. Why does it bother you so much to see other people's opinions? You know, the First Amendment is not meant to protect. Sometimes
Twitter
this
took
kind
away
of
their
stuff
power.
Can be ugly.
Twitter
I
took
guess.
Away their power. That's part of the Trump. That's part of the Trump derangement syndrome. Is that he can communicate directly with the people, sending out tweets that everyone could see, and the media didn't get to filter everything he said. That makes them resent him even more.
Yeah.
So they don't like it that we get to use now our voices on Twitter in not even equal measure, but in like a more justified measure. They don't like that because, again, they want to gain and maintain political power. And they know every time we learn something about what they're doing, it threatens that power.
Yeah. The tolerant left, as we deal with all the time. What do you think about what's going on with the 2024 race? How do you handicap it at this point, Hogan?
Look, it's still Trump. You know, I always quote that theologian that I love so much, the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. And to be the man, you got to beat the man. And
I don't know who that
is. That's what he said. And he's a wrestler from way before your time, actually kind of before mine. But he used to say that all the time, to be the man, you got to beat the man. And right now in Republican politics, Donald Trump's the man. I mean, everyone's running in the lane of where his policy without his personality But that's a very, very small lane, but it's packed with cars right now, packed with candidates. Mm-hmm. And anybody who goes after Trump runs the risk of never getting support from that MAGA base. If you go after Trump and mortally wound him, you deliver some fatal blows, then all of a sudden, you know, those people are going to turn on you. You're not going to gain that support. So if the other candidates kind of seem to all be doing the same thing, it's kind of because they are. DeSantis will take some shots. Christie's going to be a wrecking ball, of course, going after Trump nonstop. But the fact is, unless the courts somehow really hurt Trump, that's the only way I think another candidate could sit there with his arms out or her arms out and say, all those votes fall to me. And look, mm-hmm. I never attacked Trump. Look, I love Trump. I love his policies and the government's being weaponized against him, and which is true. And they can say mm-hmm. that and then, but not be tarred or stained with having tried to take down Trump. I think that's really kind of what we're seeing.
That's got to be Vivek Ramaswamy's only plan, right? Tim Scott might be kind of in that category where they figure
Vivek's now in double digits.
One poll had him at 10%.
Yeah, but I mean, that's from nothing. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You're on the move.
It's an impressive show from nowhere. But those guys have to be sitting there thinking, look, my only shot, let's be realistic, is if something does befall Trump somehow and he's mm-hmm. no longer in the race, that they would inherit his voters for having been, you know, mostly with him along the way without being critical. It's just common knowledge, common sense, you would think, that in order to beat the guy who's in front of you, you have to take that guy on, and that means attacking. But when it comes to Trump, it's like a whole different game, because if you attack him, you're going to pay the price. His supporters will then never gravitate towards you because you have shown that you're the enemy. And that's just how it works with Donald Trump.
Yeah, but you also can't go from the bottom rung of the ladder to the top without taking steps in between. I mean, you got to conquer the person ahead of you, which means they're going to have to take down someone like DeSantis so they mm-hmm. can appear to be that heir apparent to
right.
take some votes if Trump were to get harmed at all. So I imagine a lot of people are going to be focused on DeSantis, even though he's down 30, 40 points. He's kind of leveled off and even gone down in some polls at this point. I think it's going to be tough for anyone to take the title from Trump right now because, again, not only is he the 800-pound gorilla, but every time he opens his mouth, that's what the media are talking about. They're not giving the other folks oxygen. Now, Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina. I lived in South Carolina 15 years, been to Iowa a bunch with other presidential candidates. They appreciate the hand-to-hand. They appreciate coming into the living rooms, having the conversation. But that takes a while, and you have to build that up. You have to have the blocking and tackling on the ground to win, and you can do that and surprise people. I work for Mike Huckabee. I work for Rick Santorum. They both won Iowa. So they did it in a long slog way. The difference here is, every other candidate in this race says, hey, if you elect me president, I promise I'll do all the things Trump did. Trump can say,
right,
I did them. You don't have to guess. If these other candidates say they're going to do them, maybe they will, maybe they won't. I don't know. But I did them. I built the wall. I brought down crime, right? I stopped wars from happening all over the globe. I brought down taxes. That was me. So he can point to a pretty staunch record of success there. For trade deals that benefited American workers and bringing back hostages and all the things he did, the other ones just have to say, hey, I could do it. You know, if I had Congress, if I had the Senate, man, I had to fight and claw and do it. Trump just did it. So I think there's a big disadvantage for them.
Would you, if you were on that campaign right now, let me ask you two different things. Would you advise Trump not to do this first debate or any debates? And same
that was
question,
my question.
The same question. Let's assume Trump does not do the first debate. If you are DeSantis, do you go? First Trump. Would you tell Trump yes or no?
If I'm DeSantis, I'm going to the first debate because by
you
then.
Think so?
Yeah, but here's why. I think, again, we're talking about something that's happening in a month and a half. So it's hard to kind of do
sure.
it right now.
You don't know that. Let's say we're tomorrow.
But let's
we
say
don't,
it
happened, you're right.
Let's say
stipulate
it
that.
Week,
stipulate
right?
that we don't know what's going to be like in 6 weeks. But if it were tomorrow,
it's happening. Let's say, it's happening tomorrow.
Okay.
If I'm DeSantis and I'm leveled out and ticked down in polls, I need to go back out and reassert and say, look, this is why I'm the heir apparent. I can do this. I'm smart. I did a lot of stuff in Florida. Watch me. Mm-hmm. The Trump piece is difficult for me because, like, I would never tell Biden to debate RFK. It's stupid.
Right.
He's the president. Don't do that.
Of course.
But Trump's a different animal in this because, remember, there were a couple of debates he skipped in the 16 cycle because I went to those rallies for the troops he did in Iowa with – maybe it was New Hampshire – with Huckabee and Santorum. So he got the draw in the news anyway. The news was he didn't go. In this particular instance, though, if he doesn't go, there are people on the fence who may go, wait a minute, what's he hiding this time?
Mm-hmm.
But then if he goes and the performance, you know, who knows?
Look, I just don't think there's anything. I don't think there's only bad things could happen if Trump goes, right?
From his
perspective, not going, I think it's a no-brainer to not go for Donald Trump because only bad things can happen. They'll all gang up on him. You know that, you know, you could make a mistake. There are very, very, very few. There's very little upside. I mean, he's already leading by, you know, approximately 35 points or something.
Yeah,
right. So honestly, what's in it for him? So I'm going to assume that Trump does not go. And that's the case. I think I'm like 80-20 that DeSantis should also not go. Because if he appears on stage with all the single digit people, then
they're going to attack him. I think
they will attack him, yeah, because he's the one standing there. They'll still attack Trump, no doubt, but there are some of them will, not all. but DeSantis will have visually and symbolically rejoined the pack and merged in with the rest of the field. It would be a very powerful image that it's Trump against the six of them. And it will, and DeSantis desperately wants it to be a two-man race, right?
Right.
It's Trump and DeSantis and everybody else. If he's on stage with everybody else, he becomes part of everybody else. That's my view. I think I would, if I were in that camp.
But then he has to build something.
He's got it. As counter programming, it doesn't have to be the same night, but they got to come up with something that will give him some kind of pop. If he's not going to go to the debate, he has to substitute something else, and it has to be something big, right? And I don't know what that would be. I'm not in that campaign. That's not my job. But I think just visually and just for the symbolic nature of it, you can't be on stage with those people if Trump is not there. You just can't.
I think I have mixed feelings about this, but personally, I mean, it doesn't have to be this first debate, you know, whenever, I don't know. I think there should be a debate with all of the candidates. I would be in favor of that. Mostly because it would be purely entertaining, and I love debates. They're one of my favorite things to watch. But still, I mean, I understand why he wouldn't do it and, like, why DeSantis wouldn't. I think DeSantis should because I think he needs a boost. He's got to do something to set himself, you know, apart. But I don't know. I would like to see a debate with everybody.
Debates are a great entertainment and great television, but in my perspective, if you're on the campaign, debate night is just the worst.
It's the worst. It's fun if your guy does really well or your girl does really well. It's so hard.
It's so much work.
Yeah. I enjoyed our debates.
Nerve-wracking, a lot of work. There's a lot of pressure. Very, very tight deadlines. I mean, you know, you're watching the clock and you got to put, especially from the comm side, you have to push things out the door and you're putting out statements and you're writing up press releases and stuff and you're watching the clock and you know this thing ends at 10 o'clock and you have to get everything done by 10 o'clock.
What issue? Didn't know. I thought he was going to say this. What are we talking about?
Right. Yeah.
Here's the problem.
Did he say that? You got to attack the other guy for stuff that he said and then all of a sudden it's over and you've run out of time and you got to get out of the war room and run out.
You got a press call.
Oh, yeah. Then you got to do a press call and declare victory after the fact and get your meaningless press release out the door that nobody's ever going to read. But you got to do it anyway. And the whole thing's a mess.
If y'all would just get like a lower level job on a campaign, they're very fun to attend.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I guess they were fun back in the 90s when I was doing the. No, I'm kidding. I wasn't the 90s, but whatever.
Yeah. I don't even go back that far. How about that? Well, Hogan, I think Sunny had a request that we keep this one tight. She has some family in town. So
I do. Yes.
By God, I certainly appreciate you coming by.
I really wanted the cocaine Hunter Biden thing, but that's fine.
Oh, well, go ahead. Say, look, I want to say, we can talk about that. I want to say right up front that I'm very careful, and I know that this is not meant to disparage Hunter in that way, but I'm real careful with talking about people who have addictions because, you know, it's the addiction has affected me and my family, and I know a lot of people have similar experiences with that. And so I want to be very clear that I don't want to disparage Hunter in that way because of the problems that he has had and he has faced, because I know it's a very serious thing. It's life-threatening. It destroys families. And I know that it's very serious. So well, and as far as that goes, I wish Hunter Biden nothing but the best to a complete and long-lasting recovery. Honestly,
that's very nice of you.
I hope he's not hooked on anything. For sure. He does have a history of leaving things behind that are his. His gun into a garbage can near the school. His laptop, and potentially this cocaine as well. Look, I don't know if it's his, but when they finally figured out where it actually was left in the White House, it is in an entrance where senior level staffers, cabinet secretaries, family members come right through with their security, no stops, no slowdowns, other than to get over a speed, metal speed bump and to come on in the building. So that does kind of winnow down who that could possibly belong to just based on that. Obviously this room, has cubbies in it for phones, cell phones.
Where are you now under the impression that it was found? There's been three different versions.
The report now is it came in the West Exec entrance.
Okay, I know where that awning is.
That's in between the EEOB and the White House. Mm-hmm. Symbolically, dignitaries come to the South Lawn, but people, in the administration, come up that through several gates. They get there, they walk right out. To the left are some cubbies. We put those cubbies in the Trump administration because of the leaks and all the stuff. You had to put your cell phone up. Cabinet secretaries would never put their cell phone up. I would never put my cell phone up. No family member would ever put their cell phone up, walk on in.
I've been through that entrance with a cabinet secretary, and I had to put my phone in, and he did not.
Yes. There is a stopping point right there where there is a Secret Service person waiting for you to come in. Behind him, that's a situation room. And as you know, that's a place where a lot of big decisions are made, where a lot of war interactions are viewed on television screens, et cetera. So that's a problem. But as far as it being heavily trafficked, I know the administration is trying to say it's heavily trafficked. No, not in the way that they're trying to make it seem like thousands of people pour in there. It is a trafficked area because it's the White House is kind of a small place where you can enter into the room, and it's a place where it is trafficked, but heavily, I wouldn't use that word. But in addition to that, look, it's one thing if Hunter Biden does drugs somewhere else, which is we just talked about Tim being an addict is obviously a problem for him. It's quite another if he or anybody else brings drugs into the White House. It's the People's House. For the life of me, I can't figure out why right out of the gate, the White House, Karine Jean-Pierre or somebody, the president, when he had the chance in the Oval Office the other day with the head of Sweden or somebody was there to say, look, we're going to get to the bottom of this. This is completely unacceptable. The White House is the People's House. This type of illegal activity will not occur here. It cannot occur here. And the United States Secret Service has launched a full-scale investigation to find out how it got in there. We will prosecute that person. And we, as the White House, while we're not leading the investigation, we'll work with them to ensure they have all the information they need, and we'll get to the bottom of it. That being said, it's up to the Secret Service now. I refer you to them for any further questions. At least you're putting a moral flag in the ground, a legal flag in the ground that says, this is who we are. This is where this stands. Now it's over to somebody else to figure out the intricate details of the investigation and come up with who did it. They don't want to talk about prosecutions, as you know, because they're afraid that if it is Hunter Biden, that's going to be a problem. If it is a staffer that they like, if it is a cabinet secretary, it's going to be a problem. So it's obvious what they're doing. It's just sad that they're doing. There are 100 different ways to handle this. There are 100 million different scenarios as to how this cocaine got there, why it's there, what it was there for, who brought it in. But we need to know the answers because this is completely unacceptable.
Yeah. I mean, there's also, there's a million possibilities. It could be, heck, maybe a Secret Service agent brought it in. You know, it could happen. You don't think Secret Service agents could be addicts?
I'm going to bring some cocaine on Friday, and I'm going to leave it in cubbyhole 33. You pick it up when you come. Like, I could be doing this as like a drug exchange. There are a million different
There's things. A lot of different ways it could have gotten there, for sure. Now, let me ask you this. As somebody who worked in the White House every single day, could a rank-and-file staffer have gotten a bag of cocaine? And I'm led to believe it's a really small one, right? It's a little Ziploc bag. That's what they're describing it as. And anyway, is it conceivable that a rank and file staffer, mid-level staffer, could have that in his pocket and make it through security and get inside the West Wing with it?
That's pretty difficult to do. Now, again, I don't know the dogs. Like, there are several checkpoints you have to go through. There are dogs. Some of those dogs are bomb sniffing dogs, not necessarily drug sniffing dogs. So, you know, that's a different skill set.
Right. So a dog sniffing bombs would not alert on cocaine, maybe.
Maybe not. And some do both, but I mean, whatever. There's a spot there, I'm thinking specifically right at West Exec, where you have to put your stuff through a metal detector and all that. Obviously, if it's a cellophane bag, it's not going to go off in a metal detector, right? Yeah. If it doesn't have a bulge in your pocket, they're not going to patch you down. That you go through and that thing sets off, they wand you top to bottom to see what you've got. But theoretically, you could get through there without it. That, to me, though, seems a little harder to believe, only because the risk reward of bringing cocaine into the White House is a problem.
Right.
But at the same time, if you're a cabinet secretary or if you're a family member, no one's going to check you, so why would you stop to put it in the cubby in the first place?
Or it could be someone very senior who drives in through the gates every morning.
Yes, if you drive in through the gate, it's a different deal. Yeah. They don't stop you the same way. They run around your car. You have to pop your trunk. They run around you, the car with bomb-sniffing dogs. They check under the car. You go in, you park, and then you walk in. There's no check for me.
Yeah, and those senior level White House people are known to the Secret Service agents that they see every day.
Yes.
And so, you know, so I mean, there's a lot of different scenarios where I could see how it got in there. I will tell you the one thing that I do know for sure is that there is one person, at least one person, probably just one person though, who was in the White House last weekend who is extremely nervous right now. And like probably can't sleep because they're so worried that it's going to get out that it was their cocaine, whoever that happens to be, because it belongs to someone.
And
there's somebody out there who knows exactly whose cocaine that is.
I was thinking today.
I think the White House may know. I feel like, look, if this government covers up a submersible exploding underwater, imploding underwater for whatever reason, right? If a document dumps on Afghanistan on a Friday afternoon, so you don't realize they messed up. I mean, all the things they try to cover up and hide, their collusion with big tech, it makes sense that they would try and move this to the side, or as Politico reports, we may never know who did this. Right. So you hate to say it, but the track record's there. It's pretty clear.
Well, I don't think it would have ever even come to light if that audio recording hadn't been posted to that website. There's a website that records and posts all police radio traffic in Washington, D.C. And that's how this clip came up. And it was at the White House, and it was EMTs or emergency personnel had responded to the call. And somebody said over the radio that it tested positive as cocaine, the substance that was, and that's how this all came to be. It's not like the White House announced it.
Yeah. You remember when we had that event in the White House for a new Supreme Court, I think it was Kavanaugh. Anyway, and there was a COVID outbreak right afterwards, and they had like the red card map, and they had people's pictures, and it went from this person to this person. This is where the COVID traveled, and they were sitting in these, they'd lit up the seats where they were sitting.
Yeah,
if this were the Trump administration, it would be, here's the map. Here's exactly the room it came in. Let me tell you who came through this entrance at this time, this day. It would have Jared Kushner, Ivanka, Don Jr., everybody that came through, and they would be saying, yeah, this is probably who it is. They would kind of lean into maybe this is who it is. I just saw the map for the first time today on the White House, one of these networks had it and said, ah, it was found here. And it only flashed up for like 2 seconds. You couldn't even have figured it out if you wanted to.
Yeah. And none of those things make it mean anything to the general public. Like if they say, oh, it was in the White House library. Well, you know, what does that mean? Where?
But if it's near the Situation Room and it's where big time people come to that White House, that's something people understand. Not the Situation Room so much as the big time entrance, you know? Yeah.
I mean, it's an amazing story. It's just an amazing story. I don't know. We don't know that it involves Hunter. We don't know who it involves. I want to be frankly honest. And again, for anybody who cares, I have always been very careful not to attack Hunter Biden over the fact of his addiction. But there's cocaine in the White House. It's an undeniable news story, and it seems like they ought to be able to figure out how it got there.
Pretty easily.
You know,
if you wanted to.
Aren't there cameras everywhere?
There are cameras, sure.
You know, so. I don't know. Anyway,
I don't know if there's one in that room, but still.
So would you bet then that we're actually not going to find a resolution to this? That there's.
I don't know. Who's the leaker in the Supreme Court over the Roe v. Wade decision?
Yeah.
That's true.
I mean, you know, like.
Yeah.
They leak what they want to. Look, they leak what they want to leak. And that's with anybody. You leak what you want to leak. But it's got to be a pretty tight-knit group at this point. Who knows? And, look, I work with the Secret Service guys, and they are amazing, amazing folks. So hopefully they'll get to the bottom of it, and then we'll all know. Because I think the American people deserve to know this one.
Yeah, I think so. Well, Hogan, fascinating conversation. As always, we very much appreciate it. Sonny.
Sure.
Yes.
Thank you for your time.
Sonny, congrats on the baby.
Thank you.
Coming up soon. What due date is what?
August 14th, I think. I only have like 5 weeks left to go.
That is 100 years from now.
6 weeks.
All right. Yeah. Man, but let me tell you, I know you're looking forward to it, but boy, is your life going to change forever.
For the best, right, Tim?
Oh, yes. It is 62% good.
Good. Okay. That's about higher than 50. I'm good with that.
I saw like a Will Ferrell clip today. He was answering questions and it said, one of the questions was something like, what have you learned from having kids? And he goes, it's pretty simple. I hate children.
Oh my gosh. That's terrible.
Well, yes, I know. My six-year-old son behaves like a moody teenage girl. It's driving me crazy. Like, what is wrong with you? You're 6 years old. What could be so possibly bad?
He'll grow out of it.
I hope so. Well, God bless you, Sonny. And you already know.
Tim's such a cheery guy. I'm sure this six-year-old's going to grow out of it.
He will.
I probably deserve that.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. On that note, thanks, Hunter. Hunter, thanks, Hogan. I'm sorry. I had his name in my head. Sorry.
Hunter Biden on the brain.
Sorry. I've been complaining about Hunter's laptop for almost 4 years now.
It's so infuriating.
Yep. Over and over again. All right, Hogan, thank you very much. Sonny, thank you very much. And thanks to everyone for watching and listening. This has been the Line Drive Podcast.